Hello and welcome to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio. Anniversaries give us the chance to think again about the meaning of events and their relevance today. Next month, it will be exactly 70 years since the destruction by the Nazis of the Czech village of Lidice in June of 1942. The facts and figures are well known, and even in the shadow of huge numbers later killed in the Holocaust, still remain shocking. 340 people were murdered, including 88 children and all but two of the men of the village. They were killed systematically and in cold blood in a calculated attempt by the SS to prevent Czech insurgency. The extent to which Lidice later became a tool of communist propaganda, using rhetoric that equated Nazi Germany with the West, is also well known. And for many Czechs, the memory of Lidice still remains tainted by this legacy. So what can Lidice mean to us today, now that all but a handful of the survivors are no longer with us, and with memories of both Nazism and communism fading? David Vaughan brings us a special program.
Jaroslava, or Jerry Spiral, has been trying to make sense of Lidice for most of her life. She grew up in Canada. Jerry was born 3 years after the war, but her mother, half-sister and grandmother were all survivors of the massacre, and Lidice was a very real presence in the household as Jerry was growing up. The family had fled communist Czechoslovakia in 1949, when Jerry was still a babe in arms, and this added a further layer to an already complex story. Her mother would talk constantly about her traumatic wartime experiences, and they became part of Jerry's own identity. But step by step, she came to realize that she could not live her life in the shadow of the memories of others, and decided to find her own path to understanding what had happened in Lidice. As an artist, she was well placed to find ways of expressing complex personal experience, and several of her works have responded to the wartime tragedy. In the early 1990s, she also made a documentary film about Lidice called In the Shadow of Memory. The film led her to further unexpected encounters and reflections that in the end were to change her life completely, and give her a very different perspective on the meaning of the Lidice tragedy. For the rest of the program, I'll be talking to Jerry Spiral.
My mother is a Lidice woman. She lived in Lidice with her first husband, František Kubík, and my half-sister, Eva. When Lidice happened in June 10th of 1942, her first husband was killed, František was killed. He was actually the first man that was shot. He was a journalist who worked at Četeka.
That was the Czech news agency.
Yes, and so he worked there, and he was a German speaker. He had been born in Berlin, actually, of Czech parents. So they spoke Czech at home. They were a Czech family, and they just happened to live in Berlin. And when he was 18 years old, he had a choice of whether he wanted to be a German citizen or a Czech citizen. And so he decided he wanted to be a Czech citizen, came to this country, did military service here, met my mother, got married, had my sister, moved to Lidice because he saw what was coming, and he felt that if they lived out in the country, then at least Eva would have something to eat. So he was shot on June 10th. My mother and sister were taken to Kladno with all the other women and children. They separated them after 3 days. My mother went off to Ravensbrück concentration camp with the rest of the women, where she spent the next 3 years. My sister was not selected in Kladno. In Kladno, they were selecting children that were had blue eyes and blonde hair. However, the way her life was saved was such that her aunt, her name was Ella, who was František's sister, and she lived in Berlin. And so when she heard what had happened in Lidice, she wrote to the Gestapo in Kladno and said, my brother had been killed, and I'd like to take Eva. And they ended up giving my sister to Ella. So she was the only known quantity of all the children, because she would write letters home to the relatives, and they knew where Eva was. No one knew where any of the other children were.
It must have been so hard for her as well, not knowing what had happened to all the other children that she'd known and grown up with.
It was really terrible. She wouldn't talk about these things. So I really don't know how much she knew. I don't know if she knew her father was killed or not, but she did know her mother was in concentration camp. because at one point Ella took her and her own daughter, whose name was Renata, who is still alive and I'm really very friendly with, and she brought the two children to Ravensbrück.
She actually took them from Berlin to Ravensbrück?
Yes. She brought the two children to Ravensbrück. My sister had a bouquet of flowers, and they knocked on the gates of the camp, and they want to speak to Anna Kubikova. And
do you think they had any idea of where they were going, that they were going to a concentration camp?
Ella knew, but Ella was kind of a little crazy that way, and I say crazy in a fond way. She was this very short woman, and she was incredibly powerful and full of guts, and she wanted to do this. She wanted my sister to see her mother, and so she did this. And then there was a woman guard who answered at the gate and kind of looked at her like she was crazy, and she says, basically, you better get out of here because you could be locked up yourself. So she left, and she didn't just leave. She walked around the perimeter of the camp and was speaking to the children very loudly. And some Polish women that were working out in the fields saw them and heard them. And somehow word got to my mother that there was this woman with two children that was walking around, and they thought that the little girl, my sister, looked like my mother. And so my mother knew that my sister was alive. I think Ella wanted her to know that Eva is safe.
And at the end of the war, what happened to your mother was, I mean, there was chaos, wasn't there? There were the death marches where several of the Lidice women died, but your mother survived.
Yes, there was a death march, and where the women just, you know, were marched out of the camp. And then, of course, you know, things happened and people started to disperse. Slowly they made their way and would hitch rides on trucks and buses and things.
Where did they head? Did they head first to Berlin or to Prague?
No, I think they headed straight down to Lidice. And they arrived, a group of women arrived in Lidice actually on June 10th, 1945.
So it was exactly on the third anniversary of the destruction of Lidice.
Right. This was the first gathering because Lidice was such a, you know, cause célèbre. And my sister was actually there. She was brought there to Lidice that day. She was in national costume. And my mother made it there, and they got there essentially as the ceremony was over and the crowd was dispersing. And then someone at one point said, oh, there's Lidice women that are arriving. So there was all kinds of brouhaha around that, and that's when my mother saw my sister, and, you know, it was this amazing, tearful reunion. So she was the first one to return.
And was there any hint of resentment that your sister had been spared the fate of the other children and she'd managed to survive the war by being adopted by her aunt in Germany? Was there an element of resentment maybe among some of the Lidice women who had lost their children?
Oh, it was absolutely horrific. Since Eva was the first one to return, my mother was accused of having been married to a German, and that's the only reason why Eva survived, because she
even though her German, in quotes, husband had been shot by the Nazis in Lidice.
Right, exactly. I mean, he was shot with everybody else. There were 192 men that were shot.
And what happened to your mother after the war?
2 years after the war, my mother met my father, and they got married, and I was born in 1948.
And so you were actually born in the year that the communists came to power?
Right, exactly. And that created a whole lot of other issues, because my mother did not want to have anything to do with politics. And she was the only Lidice woman not to join the Communist Party. And it was less of a question of being against communism or not agreeing with communism as it was she just was apolitical. And she wanted a quiet life. She said, I spent 3 years in concentration camp because of a political act, and I don't want anything to do with politics. Politics is dirty. I don't want anything to do with it. Besides, no one's going to tell me what to do. I had to follow orders for the last 3 years, and I'm not going to follow anybody's orders. My father lost his job, and that was all due to a very small group of very powerful, I guess, Lidice women who insisted that where he worked, he was an electrical engineer, that they kick him out and that he go work in the coal mines.
Do you still feel an element of tension when you go back to Lidice all these years later because of what happened, the fact that politics split the Lidice women themselves?
Well, this is something that happened 70 years ago now, and before I was born. I know when I was coming here in the 80s, there was still this original group of women that treated our family very badly, and all I got was the evil eye. They didn't personally do anything for me, but there was a lot of talk. And I really think it's time to move on, you know. We left the country, and that was our decision.
When did your family leave the country?
We left in 1949. I was only about 7 months old.
And by that time, it must have been pretty difficult to get out of Czechoslovakia.
It was. It was very difficult to get out of the country. And what we did was my sister had gotten a permit to go into southern Bohemia and to go up into the mountains. And because she had suffered typhoid during the war, and so they got a medical permit to go down. So our family all went down. So there we were having lunch, having soup, and my father noticed that the guards were coming down on the hill with their dogs for lunch. And so he said, well, it's time. And we put the soup spoon down, gathered everybody up. We left the money. We left absolutely everything. It's basically the cliche, the clothes on our backs. My mother had an extra pair of diapers for me, and that was it. And we left. And we went up into the mountains, crossed over into Germany.
Which is ironic in itself, isn't it, that you escaped to Germany?
It is ironic that we escaped to Germany. When we were in the German refugee camp, we applied, I guess, to several countries, and I don't really know what the mechanics of it was back then, but two countries, Australia and Norway, were taking refugees at the time. And my mother didn't want to go to Australia because there's too many snakes in Australia. So we went to Norway.
And so that's where you started going to school.
I did not go to school. I was still very young. We left Norway when I was 5.5 years old, and we immigrated to Canada. My father didn't like Norway. It was too cold, and he was not a socialist, and it was a socialist system, so he was very unhappy there. So we left and immigrated to Montreal, basically where I grew up.
As you were growing up, several thousand miles away from where all these very traumatic things had happened, did your family talk about all the things that they'd been through and the complexities of all that they'd been through?
Incessantly, nonstop.
So it wasn't one of those families where people kept quiet and started a new life and wanted to make sure that the children wouldn't have to live with all that baggage, let's say, from the past?
No, my mother talked about Lidice all the time. She talked about Lidice, talked about Ravensbrück, talked about my sister being torn from her arms. It was almost every day. There was references all the time.
And your sister as well, did she talk about it?
My sister didn't talk about it at all. My mother talked about it all the time. My sister didn't.
Do you think that was because she was a child when it had all happened and it had probably left very deep wounds in her?
It left tremendous wounds for her, and I think only now, in her 70s, she's coming to terms with that. And my mother, for some reason, had an absolute need to talk about it all the time. And I was her sounding board, and unfortunately, I was really very traumatized by it, because I don't think you can talk about these things to very young children.
Also, the child can't experience it vicariously. You can talk to the child about what happened to you, but the child won't have been through the same experience.
Exactly. And the other thing is that both my father and my mother and my sister, the three of them, had been through the war. I hadn't. I was born after the war. So here it was, you know, the three of them had this certain experience, and I didn't have that experience. So by the telling the stories, I absorbed the stories, and I had this need that I wanted to belong to the rest of my family, of course. And so by listening to these stories, I guess then that made me be able to belong, but it also really traumatized me. I was too young, and the constant repetition, you can't do that to small children.
Also, I mean, as a teenager in the 60s, you must have been tempted at times just to rebel and to say, I've had enough of all this, I want to lead my own life.
Oh, I was very much a 60s child. I still am very much a 60s child. I'm always questioning. I'm always rebelling. It's like whenever my parents would say something, I would go out of my way to do the opposite, which many children do. But it was the 60s. It was a very unusual time, and it was very hard, I have to say, growing up in a traditional Czech family in Canada.
But at the same time, I should imagine through your mother, what had happened in Lidice also remained very much part of you.
I had taken all of my mother's stories and all of my mother's history and all of my mother's memories, and I made all that myself. I made that all as my own. Her memories were my memories. Her history was my history. Her stories were my stories. Her experiences became my experiences. Her victimization became my victimization, and I became a victim as well, which, of course, does not create a very healthy psychological environment. It created a lot of obstacles for me to overcome, which I only realized a little bit later in life. And I realized that I really needed to make some changes, and I needed to do something about this anxiety and this hatred and this paranoia and fear of strangers and suspicion. I had the classic immigrant refugee syndrome that we all had, and yet I really didn't want it, and I had a tremendous amount of anger. It was only much later that I was able to come to terms with that anger and really understand what it was about.
And clearly you did manage to come to terms with it and overcome it, because you're talking about it as something that was in the past.
Yes, absolutely. And it was basically through the making of my film, In the Shadow of Memory, that helped start this whole process.
And so tell us a little bit about how that film came about.
Before I talk about the film, I have to rewind a little bit. I grew up in Montreal and left Montreal. I went to graduate school in Rochester, New York, where I was there for 3 years. And then I moved to Chicago, where I met my Jewish American husband, got married, and he knew about the story of Lidice and about my life. And in 1982, it was his suggestion that we really should start audiotaping your mother, and you're in a very unique position where you can get firsthand information. So I started a whole series of interviews with my mother where I was getting the stories on audio tape. And then in 86, we came here for the first time and started interviewing survivors as well.
This was when the communists were still in power here, so it was a good deal more difficult to do that than it would be today.
Exactly, but I managed to get a visa to come here. They were less than cooperative, but I found basically everything I needed to find in the Anti-Fascist League archives, and they were absolutely fantastic. I sought out certain Lidice women who had been my mother's childhood friends, and I interviewed them.
And your mother didn't come with you?
No, she did not. No, my grandmother had died by then, and after my grandmother died, she didn't want to come here anymore, because every time she came, it always created problems and issues, and she didn't want anything, she didn't want to have anything else to do.
Did she try to discourage you from coming?
No, she didn't, and I think even if she would have tried, I would have done it anyhow. But she was curious why I would want to do all this research. And of course, she obviously told me all these stories. So when I admitted one time how much I really hated Germans and hated Germany, and she was very surprised what kind of an effect all these stories had had on me. And then she says, I probably should never have told you any of this. And she was quite upset about that.
And so what did you do with all this material that you'd been recording?
In 1992, a friend of ours who's a filmmaker said, "This is a great story. We should really go make a film." And we said, "Sure, why not? Let's go make a film. What a great idea." So we managed to gather a little bit of money, and we brought a film crew to the 50th anniversary of Lidice. We went and re-interviewed the women that I had audiotaped. We filmed during the 50th anniversary, and as serendipity had it, we met a group of Germans that were there for the anniversary, and they happened to be from Bremen. I ended up speaking to them, and it was an experience that started to change my life. I was very aggressive at first. I was very angry. I was kind of like almost like a lion that was in a cage pacing back and forth. And I was ready to attack because I was so angry. Here we were standing in the exact same spot where it had all happened. And here were my enemies. And here was my chance to lash out. And something very curious happened. And I don't know how it happened, but it just did. And instead of lashing out and instead of attacking these people, I just broke down in tears and said, "Can you help me?" And they did. And as it turns out, this was a group that was from a Bremen peace group. And they would come to Lidice every year and lay a wreath as a symbol to apologize on behalf of the German people. Of course, I say, well, these were the wrong kind of Germans for me to attack, but of course they ended up to be the right kind of Germans for me. I say that they exorcised a demon. I had all these demons in me. I had all this horrible energy, this hatred, and they kind of threw a cloak over me, and they derailed me. They derailed this fast-moving train that didn't really know where it was going, and they stopped me in my tracks and basically showed me that I had other options, that I had another way to look at this tragedy, and that you had to look at Germany in a different way. And this was a generation that was also born right after the war.
So in a sense, you were in a similar position, that you were both trying to make some kind of sense for yourselves in your own lives from the traumatic experiences of your parents' generation.
I didn't know this until 10 years later. 10 years after we made the film, they decided they'd like to bring me to Bremen, and they translated the film into German and brought me to Germany in the year 2002. And it was only there that I kind of came full circle and realized that when I was here in a room full of my enemies, the descendants of the perpetrators, and I'm the descendant of the victim, that we were really essentially the same, that we were both caught up in this horrible event in history, and that we were both victims, and that we were both stuck, and that we really had to get unstuck and move on with our lives, because this was our parents' history. This was not ours. But the Germans had absorbed all this guilt, and I had absorbed all this anger. And guilt and anger don't go anywhere. Guilt and anger has no positive resolution.
You're an artist, and it seems to me that you're in just the right profession to be able in some way to deal with these things, because there aren't many professions where you can deal in such a complex way with your own past.
I feel very fortunate that I am, because a lot of people don't have that kind of an outlet. Writers, you know, have it. Artists have it. We're able to take this emotional energy and turn it into something concrete that you can hold on to, whether it's a piece of two-dimensional art, whether it's words on a page, whether it's a painting or a photograph.
And have you made any works of art that have responded directly to this question?
I did. This is one of my very favorite stories, and this is when my son was 13 and my daughter was 9. things were working out. I was already on my way to working out these things. In the basement of our house, there were a lot of exposed pipes that were really ugly and rusted. And I had proposed to my children, let's paint the pipes, let's paint the room, and let's make it agreeable. So we went downstairs. I took out all the leftover cans of paint, and I put them in front of my kids, and I said, well, why don't you choose some colors? And my son says, oh, why don't we do red? And my daughter said, oh, why don't we do yellow? And my son said, oh, why don't we do black? And I said, no, we can't do that. Immediately, knee-jerk reaction, no, we can't do that. And they said, why? And I said, because that's the colors of the German flag. And at which point, all of us, we were stunned. We just were like silent. And my children just looked at me, couldn't believe what had happened. I immediately thought to myself, nuts, I'm doing it again. My daughter looked at me with pity in her eyes. And she said, Mom, you really have to stop doing these things. And my son just shook his head. He walked upstairs and he said to his dad, he said, Mom just hasn't learned a thing from making the film, has she? All you had to do was mention those three colors and it was kaboom, no, we can't do that. What I ended up doing after this event, which of course I was very upset about, I ended up making an art piece where I took pipes and painted them yellow, red, and black and took photographs and made it. My art is photographically based mixed media where I use photographs, where I write, and where I use objects. And I put it into a shadow box frame. And so the piece includes these pipes, and I have feathers, and I have writing, and I have photographs, and I think it's one of my most successful pieces.
A word that's often used in connection with Czech-German relations is the word reconciliation, but that isn't quite the same thing, is it?
No, because reconciliation means forgiveness. I can't in reality forgive what had happened in Leeds. I can't forgive. It's not for me to forgive. I wasn't there, so I can't forgive anybody for anything. It hadn't been done to me. I mean, I'm still pretty angry about it because it happened and it damaged my mother and damaged my family, damaged my sister. But the way I can reconcile with it is that I'm not making my mother's history my own, and I'm moving on with my life, and I'm trying to understand that history, and I'm trying to make it into an advantage rather than a disadvantage. I'm trying to draw strength from it. And, you know, people go through a lot of events in their lives, obviously not as horrific as this one, but ones where they do have to come to terms with certain things in their lives. For example, when we show this film in the United States and then we have discussions afterwards, sometimes when there's people that are, they're social workers or psychiatrists or psychologists that, you know, that are in the group, a lot of them talk about traumas of rape victims, traumas of people that have had horrible experiences of torture in other countries. So a lot of people go through a lot of trauma, and you have to come to terms with that trauma, and there's different ways of dealing with it. So we're kind of hoping that our film can also go beyond World War II and maybe address other issues in people's lives.
Jerry Spiral, or Jaroslava Spiralova, as your name is in Czech, thank you very much indeed for talking to us.
And I thank you for the opportunity. It's a real pleasure.
That special program was brought to us by David Vaughn, and you can find the entire interview online on our website, www.radio.cz. That's all we have time for today. Thanks for listening to Radio Prague, and goodbye.